This is WFO Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of WFO Radio Live Friday Cocktails, a happy hour show to celebrate the end of the week and the beginning of the weekend as we are all living through this quarantine lifestyle. I know a lot of people are getting out there and opening up and doing some things and heading to some tracks, and I'm excited about that as well. But we're going to keep the happy hours going, and today we've got a very special show that I know you're going to love. When you think of drag racing is a worldwide sport, a nationwide sport, but Southern California gets a lot of love as the birthplace of drag racing. And so does the Northeast. You think about out west, you think about OCIR and Lions, you think about Pomona up in the Northeast, you think about Englishtown, New Jersey, and all the people, population centers. But in Miami, Florida, there was a track called Miami Hollywood Speedway that rivaled them all. The tree you see in the background is right off the starting line. I was one of the last announcers there, and the stars of drag racing from Jungle Jim Lieberman on up, Garlitz Muldowney, all the greats, Bob Glidden, they all raced at Miami Hollywood. So on this show, we are going to delve into the history of the days that were, the track that was, and the people who raced there, Miami Hollywood Speedway. Started as Miami Dragway and Miami Hollywood Speedway and Miami Hollywood Motorsports Park, etc., and so on. One element that unified all those names were the racers that raced there. And we will be joined by some of the greats, namely Daryl and Jerry Gwynn, plus track manager Paul Wunderlich will join us on the show just seconds from now. We encourage you to start a watch party, especially if you're from the South Florida area. I bracket raced there for me for many years, and we're going to have a little bit of fun. You're invited to make comments in the comment section, and we have taken some photographs from various Facebook pages and YouTube, and we're going to check out the photographs. Daryl has submitted some photos, and we're going to just look at them and talk about the times that were when drag racing was king of South Florida, 1966 to 1992, and all the cool things and innovations that went on at Miami Hollywood Speedway. Now, this show is brought to you by a couple of great sponsors who make it all possible for us to put together programs like this. Total Seal Piston Rings, the leader in ring seal technology, one of those sponsors. They got a great deal going on right now, 20% off piston rings, tools. They are doing it to help racers in this very challenging time. TotalSeal.com. Tell them you heard about it on WFO radio. Also, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, the dragster adventure where you, like an average person, can drive a dragster, even compete, get the sensation, feel what it's like to drive a dragster, or maybe you want to get your top alcohol funny car license. Who knows? Go to frankhawley.com. Samtech.edu, the next generation of crew chiefs, engine builders, from factory stock showdown to top fuel, can get started at a place like Samtech, or maybe you're not even interested in racing, but you just want a great career. CNC programmer, motorsport EFI tuner, they do it all. Factory Stock Showdown, of course, samtech.edu, and we do a podcast for them called Factory Stock Podcast. Also, Marvin Rodak, rodakscoffeeandgrills.com. We got a sponsor that you can enjoy literally every morning with a little Rodax gourmet coffee, drag racing themed blends. Marvin Rodak, great guy, drag racing fan, and big supporter of WFO Radio. We've got some other folks like Drag Racing Edge. We had Johnny D on yesterday. We had Mike Heiner on. Just so many great people joining us. And really, you can watch on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, wherever we see and do live streams. But it's all about the podcast audio for the hardworking guy who's on his way to work who wants to enjoy the show over the course of the weekend. All right, let's get into it. Joining us from somewhere in beautiful, sunny South Florida, Miami's own, the Miami Sound Machine that really mattered, Daryl Gwynn, Jerry Gwynn, joining us. Guys, how are you doing? Welcome.
We're wonderful.
Good. Everything's good. We're not quite into the first cocktail yet, but we're getting there. We wanted to fit in, you know. We just wanted to make sure that we are part of the Miami Hollywood crowd because you've got a drinking to tell some of the stories that happened back then.
And isn't that the truth? Now, this cocktail show is just, I think and thought it was important to denote the end of the work week with people staying home and maybe not working. Like, you've got to have a celebration of the weekend. And the cocktail show is it. A couple of weeks ago, we had Tobler, we had Galvin, we had Dickie Venables, John Collins, of course, Ron Capps, and we all had a great time. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to share some stories? Maybe if you're from Southern California or the Midwest, you don't know from Miami Hollywood and the scene that was down here. As you guys know, I came in a little late as a little boy in the late 70s. Track opened in 1966. Jerry, you were there from the very beginning. This place was a mecca of drag racing, a massive facility, stock car track, road course, great infrastructure, and you know, the best of the best all race there, and it was your home track, Jerry.
Absolutely. It was built way ahead of its time. It was the premier racetrack in South Florida.
Concrete grandstands
and had different businesses underneath it, shops, yeah, and that kind of stuff.
Terry's Auto Supply underneath. They had a speed shop under the grandstands for years from the day it opened. And Terry's Speed Shop.
Terry's Auto Supply.
And since the day that place opened, obviously my dad's raced there. I've been there. And you mentioned Tobler and Galvin and all those guys. They had the exact same experiences, I should say. But on the West Coast and other places, we all kind of grew up the same, you know. At Miami Hollywood in the 60s, you could go there on a Saturday night, or in the early 70s on a Saturday night, and you could learn everything about drag racing, the good, the bad, and the ugly all in one night, where it would normally take you months to figure it all out. A lot of stuff happened at Miami Hollywood, a lot of entertainment. If you weren't into racing, that's okay, because they had Hercules there that used to lay on a bed of nails, and they would take a sledgehammer and they put a concrete block on his stomach, and they take a sledgehammer and break the concrete block with a set sledgehammer while he was laying on a bed of nails, while he had the microphone, while they had a remote mic to his mouth. And then when he got off the bale of Neds, he would chew on a light bulb. And like what? Who comes up with this? Of course, Ken Carter was one of the promoters, and Bruce Johnson, and you know, they were jumping, you know,
school buses.
Yeah,
school buses.
Yeah. First they started jumping school buses, and then it turned into, gee, why don't we take the school bus and jump some motorcycles with it? I mean, they've done everything you can think of. And like I said, good, bad, or ugly, the fans were, the place was packed all the time. Every named racer in the country was there. And I got to tell you, from 66 to the day that place closed, I wouldn't trade any memory for the world, and I learned 90% of what I know about drag racing right there at Miami Hollywood.
Tremendous. Now, we've got some of our WFO radio listeners and regulars already checking in, saying what's up. Mark out there from SoCal, Dave Lay, NHRA Tech, Eric is in Oregon. Al Pope, the tech guy for many, many years out there, one of the last running a slingshot bracket car, is out there, which is great. Now, you guys have submitted some photographs, Daryl. Pretty amazing stuff. And this was the home track. You guys were the home crowd. And South Florida was a bit of a hotbed of performance. The weather is really what it's all about. Crane cams heavily involved. So, Jerry, tell me a little bit about this. How old is Daryl? How old are you in this picture with Baby Huey in the background?
Oh, let's see. That was probably in, that was 70. In 70 or 71.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was like just 30.
And I was
Daryl,
10.
Daryl was 10, 9 or 10.
That is amazing stuff. And one of the things about the track is it's just so beautiful with the palm trees in the background, the giant tower, like a purpose-built facility. And
that was Pete Robinson, by the way.
Okay. See, look at that.
That's Sneaky Pete Robinson, one of the greatest all time back in the day.
Unbelievable. And I appreciate you doing that, because you have a firsthand knowledge. These guys were heroes. But the track itself was the brainchild of Norm Johnson, who we have to remember, like developing developers, the people who made things back then. Like South Florida was a little bit like the Wild West. I was a big part of the city of Fort Lauderdale's 100th year anniversary, and we talked a lot about the New York Yankees and how the Yankees in spring training was a big deal. And just bringing the Yankees down for spring training in 1962 was a big deal. Norm Johnson was a developer. He invented and created the town of Sunrise. He developed it and was known for the upside down house. And what he decided to do was build a house upside down out in Sunrise that would bring people out there and say, you know, like, oh my gosh, we could live out here. This is a nice place. And millions of tourists would go see this upside down house. And obviously the development worked. Well, he got into drag racing and I guess was involved at Masters Field or Amelia Earhart, maybe his son perhaps, and decided to build Miami Hollywood Speedway Park. Here's an aerial photograph. One of the longest shutdowns out there, Sportatorium, and of course, a third mile oval, which was a high banked oval back in the day. Spectacular stuff. Jerry, what was the drag racing scene like in South Florida prior to Miami Hollywood? And what do you remember of the days of the rumors that they're going to build a track? Like they're going to try to build a facility out there in the Everglades. And we're not hearing Jerry, which is annoying, but we'll continue on. Daryl and Jerry, if you guys can hear me, obviously this is internet-based.
Yeah, well, we raced at Amelia Earhart.
Yes.
And then we raced at Masters Field, the North.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you both. Daryl? Yeah, you're doing good. It's just kind of cutting in and out. The internet is taxed a lot. Go ahead, continue. You're good.
You're Daryl.
Yes, continue.
Okay. So, if you can hear me, my dad raced at Amelia Earhart, and he raced at
All right, what we'll do is we'll give you guys an opportunity for that to stabilize. For whatever reason, it's given us a little bit of a hard time, and we'll add to the stream. He was the track manager out at Miami Hollywood. During this period, Mr. Paul Wunderlich.
Masters Field.
And they built the... We lose you?
Yeah, we've temporarily lost you. I'm going to kick you out, and you will reconnect, and we'll hopefully get a better internet connection. It's just challenging for the second. But Paul Wunderlich joins us now. Paul, center yourself on the camera. Paul, we're going to get reconnected with Daryl and Jerry Gwynn, talk a little bit about that. But you were much in the same situation. You were the track manager. You were the lane manager. You worked at the track. Your wife sold tickets, round track or otherwise. What was your perspective of the birth of the track? How did it come about?
Well, Norm Johnson was the brain behind this. And let me clear one thing up. I was not there at the very beginning. I was there, but I wasn't involved with management at the very opening. I didn't get involved with management and running till 1970.
Got it. Well, that's irrelevant. You were there the first day, though, certainly. You were at the track as a spectator. So try to describe the excitement of this brand new facility.
Oh, it just was unbelievable. I mean, nobody ever thought we'd have a, something like that. I mean, you're so used to the small strips like the Earharts and the Master Field and all that. And then to come out and have a real sighting, and you're going to bring the big boys in. We're going to bring some big boys in, Rich, you know, over the year. Like Jerry was there a lot. Then we had Richard Tharp, Jungle Jim Lieberman. I mean, you just went on and on and on, you know, coming on. And people just went crazy. The thing with today's world is that Hollywood took it for granted. It was always there. And you could go and not go. But people, they're missing it now because they realize what they had?
They had a premier facility, a world-class facility, the concrete grandstand, and the discussion. For those of you logging on to see Daryl and Jerry, like Brian, Daryl, one of the heroes growing up, we're going to let them get reconnected. As you all know, the internet is being heavily worked, and we've had such great luck with this, connecting with people all over the country. And so we're going to give them an opportunity to get reconnected, and we'll enjoy a beverage. Paul, just so you know, cheers. Thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate you and what you're doing. Drag racing then, though, it was new. Everybody in it was young. Everybody was out there. We had so many different places to race in South Florida. I was not alive at that time, but when Johnson decides to build the facility and you go out and you see racing and all of a sudden in the early days, like professional drag racers are going to start coming down here, you wanted to be involved. So talk about trying to get a job there. And you worked there from 1970 to 1992 and still work at South Florida's, you know, Homestead Miami Speedway, South Florida's operating drag strip, Fastlane Friday. But so you must love drag racing. Talk about getting a job there for the first time. Like, how'd it go down?
Well, it was real hard to get a job there because you had to be 20. Bruce would not allow anybody under 21. But the reason I got involved, my dad was a post office man, and the Johnsons knew one of the head, one of the post office guys my dad worked, was in charge of security. So he hired my dad to come in security. That's how I got involved walking out there. I didn't work right away, but I got out there with my dad because I got in free with him. Because so it was kind of fun. And I was just sitting when we did NHRA class racing a lot. There was no such thing as bracket racing when we started. It's similar, but if anybody doesn't know it, we can explain that later. Class racing the same. But it just, it was wild. I mean, then they started adding, I always called it the, when they started the Circus Act.
The Circus X, and that's right. We're going to talk a little bit about that in that, you know, jumping stuff, Bullet Bob, all the school bus stuff. You were an employee there the whole time. In fact, we have tracked down a photo from the folks out there in the Remember Miami Hollywood Speedway Facebook group of Big Daddy Don Garlitz doing a fire burnout at Miami Hollywood Speedway. And you look at this photograph and you see Garlitz and you see fire and you see the fans going crazy and you see one guy illuminated. And you think that that's you?
I do. I believe that's me because that's where I was at.
And that's a little close, Paul. I'm just saying you're a little close to the fire right there. Fire burnout's a thing from the past. But my goodness, you were very close. Did you singe your eyebrows?
No, I didn't singe, but I got pretty warm.
Now, the idea that, you know, Garlitz coming in all the time, the crowds, the people, all that stuff. It was a zoo out there sometimes. How did you guys manage it?
It was tough sometimes. I mean, well, we kept people back. We didn't allow people coming up past the bridge and except the crew members. We had the no spectator. We had enough walls and fences around that kept the security pretty good on that.
It was a huge facility, though. And Daryl and Jerry and everybody, Miami Hollywood is iconic because of the concrete grandstand. And it was made out of these prefab concrete tees that would be used to make an overpass of some sort. And it was a huge thing. You could put out, like, people would bring blankets and they would set up there. You can see a shot of it here in the past. And these are the stores underneath that Daryl and Jerry were just talking about. There was commerce and people would go and hang out there. So what about that concrete grandstand? What do you know about that?
I just knew that was built. Norm Johnson decided he wanted stores. And some of them guys in the stores were bought into the complex, bought into Miami Hollywood in the beginning. He sold stock in some of that. I think Jerry might know some of that. But there was, he eventually bought it all back. But the stores were open when I first started there. Terry's was the biggest one. Terry's Auto was the very biggest one. They were, I forget who they all were. The very end one on the north was a self garage. You could pay some money and you, there was lifts and jacks, and you could work on your car in the very last one. Jerry might know more about that than I do, too. But I went by it, but I wasn't actually – I just saw it.
Oh, there you go. Let's bring on Daryl and Jerry again, D and JG and DG. There you go. Boy, you guys have – we got reconnected. You guys got to readjust. This is live. It's on the fly, and nobody cares because it's happy hour, and we're having beverages, baby. So
there you go.
This is high tech with a bunch of low tech hillbillies right here.
Isn't that – no, listen, it's so true. Like Paul and – but how do we do a show for the internet – and talk about history, and we just got to grind it out, and that's it. We're going to just grind it out. Jerry, you were talking about Masters Field and Amelia Earhart and Miami Hollywood coming on the scene. I want to get your perspective on that because it had to be exciting for drag racers. Anytime there's a new track coming, it had to be a big deal.
Oh, it was, and it was a premier racetrack. It wasn't an old abandoned airstrip that we used. It was purpose-built. And, you know, and they had lights. We didn't have lights. They had one big floodlight at the end if we ran at night, and they shined it down through there. So at Miami Hollywood, they had all the newest, latest stuff with the Christmas tree. When we raced at Amelia Earhart, they used a flag, the flagman. And then they came up with the Klondike system, and Jerry Tyson was involved with that, and he was one of the people that was – very instrumental in making the Klondike system work.
This guy in the camera right here, other than maybe when Jungle Jim came to town, Jerry Gwynn's Baby Huey was always there and always put on a great show and was always a fan favorite. And even when them Nitro guys came to town, my dad would match race against them guys and whip their ass half the time anyways. But obviously, my dad knew how to do a long, smoky burnout. The noise wasn't there. But we certainly played with a big crowd. Jungle Jim came to our house, and you name it. Every top racer in
Garlitz,
the country.
They
used to come Beetle, stay at our
everybody
house.
Everybody stayed at the house.
Yeah.
And why? How does that happen that you are the lodging for the booked-in shows for Miami Hollywood Speedway? Like, they would come and stay. How does that organize? Like, did you say, hey, guys, come stay at my house? Or did they say, hey, Jerry, man, can we stay at your house?
Hey, we weren't getting paid a lot of money back then, so you had
that's
to do what you had to do.
That's what you did, and that's what I did in my career most of the time. I mean, I stayed at three or four different houses during my course of the career all across the country because, you know, you get a hotel every night and work in the parking lot. That's not the best case scenario. So, you know, they'd come work on their cars and stay at the house, and that's what people did back then. I'm telling you, people hardly ever got hotels unless they were – you know, driving down the road and they had to pull over and stop because you always had friends along the way.
Which that is a great thing. So let's we got Paul Wunderlich, and I want to get you guys on at the same time. And then we have another guest we're going to bring on because I didn't tell you everybody that's going to come on the show, Daryl. But some people are going to come on that are connected to Miami Hollywood. But I want to get your opinion on some of these photographs that we sent and that we have set up, because one of the big things. The Baby Huey was very popular. I remember you guys match racing against a jet car. I remember you dragging Bullet Bob. I was there for that. And you did have a home field advantage. You did have a home crowd. It's hard to explain when the Packers play in Green Bay. It's easy to understand it. But for a drag racer, Jerry Gwynn was the guy and everybody else was an interloper. And then they started using you in these interesting ways. But talk a little bit about first getting started. I showed you this one, but we got some other shots from back in the day. And just kind of talk about cycling through the cars that you had, Jerry. Like, where did it start from first race car to where it ended up?
Well, it all started back when I was going to get a second car so I could drive it back and forth to work. My wife was working, and I bought a 49 Anglia from a friend of mine's brother for $10. And I put a small block Chevrolet in it, and one of my buddies, Herbie Tillman, that ran a stock car, had crashed his stock car. And I almost had this car finished. And he said, why don't you go out to the drag races and race it? And I was like, my motor's not together yet. He said, take the motor out of my stock car, put it in there, and go run it. It had four Stromberg 97s on it. And I went out there, and I won 9 weeks in a row. It paid $50 to win. And I thought, man, I'm working for $50 a week, and now I'm making $50 a week.
I think you remember saying you were shitting in tall cotton.
Shitting in tall cotton. <That's> exactly
right. Well, if you're working all week and you're making $50 and you're playing with a car, racing it, it's fun and work, and making the same amount of money, it makes a whole lot of sense that you would want to continue to do that.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And when we took that money and I built a Roadster in, I sold that car and I built a Roadster and put a small block Chevrolet in it. And I had access to a bunch of aluminum and stuff. And I made, the car only weighed like 1,100 pounds when I got finished with it. And it ran really, really good with a small block Chevrolet in it. And I put a blower on it. And then I built the Roadster, Baby Huey.
The first Baby Huey. That
the
one
first
right
Baby
there.
Huey Roadster
that's
right
Miami
there.
That's Miami Hollywood right there. And I believe that's Lou Azar's truck in the back.
That's, yeah, it is. It's Lou's. And then I ran a wedge motor in it. And my buddy Dick McFarlane, he had a Hemi motor in his dragster. He had a AA gas dragster. And he decided one Saturday he was going to warm his car up and went around the corner and drove it into the garage. Somehow the throttle linkage broke or clutch linkage broke or something. And he crashed the car and rolled it over.
In the garage.
And he said, take my motor and put it in your car and go race it. So we did. And we went to Miami Hollywood. And normally back then, the only thing we did was we had to motor about 24 inches, the center of the crank, 24 inches from the ground. And I couldn't drive it. You couldn't drive it with 18 hands. It was more than you wanted. So I went home and I decided I was going to lower it down into frame rails. And I took it right to Englishtown. And the record was 912. And I went 892 with it the first run. And then I went 878 with it.
Oh, we just lost him. And so, he's getting a phone call. That's what that means. Let's bring back, there he is. Let's bring back Paul Wunderlich. Paul, center yourself on the camera a little bit. Daryl and Jerry, I'm going to bring in another guest who is ready to go. Someone you guys might know who also has got a South Florida connection, who is the current world champion crew chief, co-crew chief in the Nitro Funny Car category for John Force Racing and Robert Height, Mr. Chris Cunningham.
How you guys doing?
There he is. We got Daryl and Jerry. We got Chris. And we
better
got
Paul. Known as Chippa.
Yeah, yeah.
And why is that?
Care to elaborate, Daryl?
Yeah, elaborate, Daryl. Now, we have found...
Better known as Chippa.
Why is that, though? Chris, we have found in the past that maybe Daryl can't hear you, or you can't hear Daryl, or et cetera, and so on. Okay. So, Daryl, can you hear Chris? Chris, talk to Daryl.
Daryl, can you hear me?
Yeah, see, that is the one.
Yes, I can.
Oh, there it is. Okay. So why do you call him Tip Up? What's up with that? What's the nickname for Daryl?
Works better. Yeah, just walk in. We're going to walk it in the house.
See, these guys wanted to have, Chris, they wanted to have like an elaborate background, showing Florida,
yeah, exactly.
Probably. Now, what about you? What is your, you obviously worked with Daryl for many years, your dad, Mike, South Florida native. So you talk a little bit about the track and about the history.
So I got going in there when I was a kid. I was just a youngster. I was probably the first time I stepped foot in there was in the late 60s. So I was 3 or 4 years old, who knows. I got pictures of me sitting on my dad's open trailer, and he had a degas 40 Willys degasser called the Harry Canary, and I remember going there with my sister, and Daryl and Jerry were there, and you know, just running around as kids and having a blast.
I can imagine. And the craziness and the chaos that came from the pure era of drag racing in the 1960s to the entertainment and crazy show. We've got Paul Wunderlich is joining us. Paul Wunderlich was the lane manager out there and worked at the track for a long time. The booked-in
hey,
shows.
Chris. How you doing, bud?
The guys that the guys that were the, you know, it's a circus act. Like, you lived through that era. What do you remember?
Oh, man, I remember a lot of the stuff. Like, I heard Daryl and Jerry talking about Garlitz and Jungle Jim and the Hell on Wheels, you know, the wheel stander, just big times. And like you said, the guy that Jerry drug behind his car, I forgot what his name was. You said his name just a few minutes
ago. Bullet Bob.
Bullet Bob, that's it.
Yes.
That's just some crazy times back then, watching the entertainment. And the guy with his flying kite bike, and remember that dude?
The jumping. No, well, I was I was a fan in the grandstands, and my view was like, it was such a great, the concrete grandstand was so great because you were high up in the air. There's a good view. You were much higher than you would normally be at any other track that I've really been, except for the new modern super tracks. And so you had an interesting perspective. Like, this is one of the views from low in the grandstand of Garlitz running a jet car. But you can see right here in the background of this shot that Garlitz is standing in front of the concrete grandstand. You were way up there, and you had a lot of space. So you could see a lot of the chaos and the craziness, and it was just a whole lot of fun. But you were a teenager out there, Chris. Like, that had to be in the 70s. That's what I'm talking about. There had to be all kinds of stuff, and Daryl alluded to it. There had to be stuff going on out there that was totally unrelated to the drag racing that was also very interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had the Sportatorium right next door to that, and you go to a bunch of concerts and you know, just all the stuff that goes on and the people you hang out with at the racetrack when you're there on Saturdays. I don't know who did all the promoting back then, but, you know, to put dragsters against jet cars and create that kind of atmosphere, that was just fun times back then, you know?
Now, Paul, I know you knew Chris's dad real well. Talk a little bit about those times, the promotion of the circus-style events that happened at Miami Hollywood that packed the track, traffic down Hollywood Boulevard for miles and miles. It was a chaotic zoo. There was no internet. There were no phones. There were no streaming. It was, if you wanted to do something wild and crazy, that's where you went.
Yeah, those are the flyers on the telephone poles that you see running around town, you know, the Miami Hollywood Saturday night in the pink papers and the green papers and all. Yeah, there you go.
Saturday night under the lights, Miami That's Hollywood it. Speedway.
That's it.
They used to advertise like crazy on the radio, too.
Sure did.
Why would they advertise so much? Like, where did they get the budget? You know, drag strips now, advertising on the radio is, you know, I would imagine it's more affordable now than it was back then with all the competition, et cetera, and so on. How were they able to advertise so much?
I think because the Sportatorium got involved, I think there with the concerts, I think that opened up a different can of worms because it was the same ownership. Bruce Johnson was phenomenal. You guys, he was 2 years younger than me. They always considered me as, with the Johnson is the second son, because I was it there so long. But Bruce was a magnet. He just, he come up with all this stuff. Got a hold of Ken Carr, Freddie Boom Boom Cannon blew himself up out there. You know, I couldn't remember the name, Joe. I just remember, I found it.
Well, you have a wealth of paraphernalia, right? Like, you've got a lot of Miami Hollywood stuff, Paul. People don't realize that Paul is like the guy who connects all of drag racing from then till now and has worked and touched and been out there. And you've got some stuff, Paul, that you dug out.
Right. Chris just mentioned about the Hell on Wheels cannon. There's a picture of it.
Oh,
He signed it for me right there on the top. You can see that.
Yes. Yep. Best of luck, Paul.
Yes. And we had, and then also, you guys remember this. There's one of Don Garlitz debuting the helicopter-powered dragster.
Wow.
There's the flyer.
Big Daddy. And Daryl and Jerry are working to get back, everybody, just so you know, because we got to get Jerry to tell us the story of dragging Bullet Bob. Like, I want to hear that story, because there was a photo of him, Bullet Bob, on Facebook that really kind of spawned a lot of this, and it was very impressive. Now, let's, Paul, I'm gonna bounce you out for a second. Continue to watch, Chris. You hang tight. We're gonna see if we can get Jerry and Daryl back in. They are still working on it. It's just internet is sporadic here in South Florida, unfortunately. Jerry is doing. We're hanging tough with you, Jerry. You just keep working the problem. No worries. But we're gonna bring in another. Listen, this is live, baby. We got to just go with the flow. We're gonna bring in another South Florida racing personality who got a start at Miami Hollywood Speedway, who went on to great things. Hang with us, Chris, and let's bring on Mr. Hector Arana, the Hammer.
Hey, the Hammer.
Hector the Hammer
Arana. Hammer in the house.
Lenny Baticki named you that, and both of you two are world champions at the NHRA level. Like, you've gone on to the highest heights, and you got your start at Miami Hollywood Speedway. Like, there was a time where you guys could have been kicking around, standing at the head of the Georgia lane, just watching drag racing together. Who knows? And now you're at the highest levels as champions. Hector, what is that like to think about starting off and your early roots at that track?
Wow. You know, I never thought I'd be doing this. Never in my life. And, I never knew that Hollywood was my backyard, and a friend of mine took me there, and that was it. Once I found that place, I was there every day. Then I find out that they we used to do test and tune on Thursday, race on Friday. Then, so I was there, man. I didn't miss a day.
Repping the motorcycles and starting off at the lowest levels. Like, you guys weren't always first racing cars weren't big show stuff, but you guys wanted to do it. Chris, what was the first car your dad raced?
He had something before 40 Willys, before the 40 Willys. And I don't remember what it was. That was, before my time. And I've got some pictures of him, but I don't remember what they were.
Wow. And Hector, what about you on a motorcycle? Which was your first ride out there?
It was a V65 Magnet, a street bike.
Okay.
That was my motorcycle. And from there on, I just, I watched the other guys. They had wheelie bars. They had everything. I go, man, I'm going to do that. And that's what I want. And it just, the love and the passion for racing, it just took over.
And you go on to qualify, attempt to qualify at the Gator Nationals and qualify number one at the Gator Nationals and ultimately win and go on to be a champion, a great drag racing story. We got Daryl and Jerry are out there. You guys, listen, you guys win the award for fighting hard to be on this show. I want to thank you for making the effort regardless.
It's called, we're the biggest hillbillies, so we just couldn't figure it out. That's all.
That's okay.
His phone died. We went all over the house trying to make it work. Now we switched back to another phone.
Well, you're doing great.
We're good.
So Chris Cunningham's here. Hector Aran is here. We got Paul Wunderlich is now back. It's a true happy hour. Cheers to everybody. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for all of you being part of the reason why I am in drag racing. From Hector, like, you doing and realizing your dream, and Paul being nice to me as a kid as the announcer, and Chris, obviously I remember you from being a young guy, but really we all want to hear, Jerry, everybody has already referenced the night you dragged Bullet Bob down the racetrack. So tell us that story while we've got you connected. How did that all come together?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it such a bummer? Go ahead.
I wanted to be careful and not.
See the internet, where they are, it's just frustrating.
Arms out of his sockets when I took off, so I kind of just drove it out.
You should have heard the joke that we were all saying before we went up there about trying to drink.
So he's saying that he didn't want to rip the guy's arms out of his sockets, obviously. Guys, keep working.
You gotta.
Yeah, keep working. I'm gonna bounce you guys out. Keep working it. Bring Paul back in. But the story goes. Let's hear Paul Wunderlich's version of the story. Paul, you were there that night. How'd it go down?
I was there that night, right behind him when he came up to Jerry. They said they were gonna pull him down the track. And I remember Jerry pulled the car up this past the water after he did a burnout a little bit, and he laid down, and he got him. He was totally in a big metal thing around the front of him, and he laid down, and the Christmas tree came down, and he went, and Jerry was, like he said, he was going slow. He was scared a little bit. He never had somebody behind him on the ground, and he was going like this. He was swaying, going down the track. You could see sparks. But he was swaying. So he came back. Jerry brought him back up. He got off the thing. He went and got in Jerry's face. I mean, I can't remember all he said, but he really gave you a hell of a time. And he said, I want you to pull me down this track at least 160 or whatever it was, mile an hour. Jerry said, okay, SOB, let's go.
Can you hear us okay?
Yes, now we got you. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right, so the rest is history. We came back after that first run, and for the first time that I ever can remember, the whole grandstand's booed. And I'm like, Dad, we definitely got to run again because we ain't going to get out of here safely if we don't. And sure enough, we did. And I'll never forget riding in the truck to go pick my dad up. You know, it's dark down there. It's 18 feet up a bull's ass down there at the finish line, you know. And my mom's got the bright lights on, so she doesn't run over the guy because he can't get up because he has got these steel plates all over his belly. He can't get up by himself. So we're trying not to hit him while we're driving down there because you had to go down the track to pick up the race car. And come to find out the guy's arm or ankle or something was broke when we got down there.
Hey, he broke his wrist everywhere. Or something, didn't he?
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I remember that guy. That guy said, when I tell you to pull me, I said, pull me. Like, all right, Jerry said, I'll pull you. Here we go.
Jerry, I love that you agreed to it, though.
He got pulled the next time.
Yeah, that's what I love that you agreed with. This is a very 1970s thing.
Hey, if Norman and Bruce Johnson give you extra $50, you go do anything.
My
right?
dad would do anything for money.
It was like, you know. I was like the guy that was there every month doing the match races with everybody. So, you know,
that's
fun
the good old days when you didn't have to worry about a lawsuit.
Right. That's right. Yeah,
you just drop them off at the
politics
hospital and
everything
say,
else.
Fix them up.
There it is. And you were the guy. Like, you match raced against a lot of people, including a jet car. Now, I remember a night that you match raced a jet car. It wasn't probably the only time, but I also remember being a little kid and rooting, like, little kids care about what they're watching. And I really had a significant interest in seeing the wheel driven car beat the thrust car. Like, I cared about that. And every run you like got way out on him and then he just nipped you at the light. But talk a little bit about that, Jerry, and just like putting you up against anything.
Well, what we did was we hung a gasket
piece of cardboard. We tie wrapped
from the front wheel back about to the motor plate.
Because we didn't want the front of the car to get sandblasted by the jet. So my dad wanted to leave on him.
So I left on him every time.
And we had this thing
that
didn't
before
break
they had the guard beams and all in the thing. So I was way out, like, 100 feet on him before he ever took off.
Yeah, the beam didn't break till the rear tires because we had a piece of cardboard running all the way down the chassis.
So you cheated. So you cheated.
That way I could get out and he'd catch me at the other end. But by then he was shutting off, so I didn't get sandblasted in the front. Otherwise, I learned because I'd run him a couple of times. And they'd get ahead of you, and they would blast all of that sand into the windshield. And with the Lexan windshield, it would just destroy the windshield.
Yeah.
So I figured after putting a couple of windshields in, I figured a way to do it.
Wow. And that was what it was all about. Jumping school buses, crazy stunt shows, guys blowing each other up. One of my vivid memories was slamming Sammy Miller with the vanishing point. That was a big deal. Because, again, these are the formative years.
He was a local as well.
I know that Captain Jack McClure, he was a Fort Lauderdale guy. What's with South Florida, guys? Sunny place for shady people. It was true back in the 70s, too.
Sunny place for shady people. I like that.
Billy Corbin. I got to give the credit to Billy Corbin, who did the Cocaine Cowboys doc. But yes, he did say that. But to be at the drag strip, watching all that go down, and you guys were where people wanted to stay. What about Jungle Jim? Wasn't he like a part-time resident of South Florida?
He raced so much down here, but I don't think he was a part-time guy.
One of his crew members lived in Hollywood. His name was Mike Bump. And back in the 70s, everybody that used to come to town for a big monthly race at Miami Hollywood, to do, you know, other than radio and TV, there was no other means of advertising. So Norman and Bruce Johnson always worked a deal with the Hollywood Fashion Mall. That was over by Chris's house. And the Hollywood Fashion Mall, on a given Thursday or Friday, would have my dad's car and Jungle Jim's car and McCulloch's car and Dale Creasy's car. And that's the shopping malls, because that's all there was to do. And there really was all these bunny cars in the middle of the shopping mall. And that brought the people out to Miami Hollywood.
Wow. Amazing. And we just talked with Hector a little bit. Now, Hector, when did you first go to the track? Like Daryl and Jerry was there day one. Paul Wunderlich was there day one. Started to work in 1970. Chris was there early on. I can tell you the first year I went to the racetrack, I'm going to make a guess, 1978, something like that, at 5 years old. My vivid memory of the first time I ever went to Miami Hollywood as a tiny child was my parents. We were sitting on the spectator side of the track. And I remember feeling like I was going to fall through the grandstand. So I couldn't worry about the cars. Like, I was worried about my safety. And so then we always went on the other side of the track. What about you, Hector? First, like the year you went there first, that you discovered this track, what year was that?
I believe it was 1984.
Okay. So right in the middle of the chaotic time.
Yes. And you know, like I say, I remember Paul Wunderlich always with his Panama hat going around, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. He's got it.
There you go.
He's got the hat.
Mr. Staging Lanes.
Ran the lanes, did everything. Now, what about the stock car track, guys? That was a big deal. Paul was telling me that when Dick Moroso bought the track, which kind of brought the track into a different era, which was more bracket racing, a little more buttoned down, maybe a little more professional. I want your opinion, but that the circle track was a big part of his motivation. Any of you guys race at the circle track or do anything? It was not in action when I first started to go, but I understand it was a big deal back then and that a lot of people actually loved it.
I've been there many, many a times and watched the stock car race myself. I don't know if you've ever even seen a stock car race there, Dad. Maybe
yeah, I have.
But I used to go there all the time when they had the stock car races, and I've actually seen that's a super modified right there. I've actually seen the super modifieds run at Miami Hollywood, and they would haul ass around that high bank third mile.
I can't even imagine. That's Arm and Holly, but that car is too fast for a third mile high banked oval. Like, how the heck did they do that?
Yes, it is. It was, yeah, Ollie Silva, all those guys used to come down Bentley Warren, and they were bad fast around that place. It was crazy to watch.
What about that, Paul? The round track, the drag strip, the facility, like it looked like there was some sort of bigger plan for maybe what happened.
Well, they planned on the stock car track being bigger, but they had a lot of problems with Hialeah. Hialeah, was called the Greater Miami Racing Association, and they got into a little friction because our track, Hialeah, was a flat track. It wasn't, and as you said, Miami Hollywood, the oval was a high bank. It was high bank, real green, and they got into a pissing contest. Excuse my French, but they would fine the drivers if they ran at Hollywood $200 when they went back to Hialeah. That caused a problem. They never could get the stock car going. But here's the thing on you guys on the wing jobs. Norm Johnson was from Indiana, and most of those guys were from that area. Once a year, he would bring those guys down. He knew, I don't know which ones he knew the best, but he had a connection. with that group, and once a year he would bring them into Hollywood, and he would fill the grandstands up. He didn't give a damn about Hialeah at that time because he didn't have a lot of regular stock cars. He went into the wing jobbers.
It's a pretty amazing track if you think about it. And Norm Johnson, I guess this is a tribute to him in many ways. Like, there's so many innovators of South Florida. And Jerry, you've been involved with South Florida infrastructure for a long time, so you know better than anyone. But it took a swashbuckling kind of character to go out and just decide to build a city. And after drag racing was over, when Norm got rid of the track or leased it to Dick Moroso, he got into cars. And these cars that you see, Johnson Phantom and the Johnson Presidential kit cars, basically on General Motors underpinnings, became pretty popular. So he always stayed involved in cars, and he was kind of a big dreamer, I guess, to have created all of this.
Yes.
Every
Saturday night or Sunday when it was time to get paid, going with my dad, he'd hold my hand. I'd be so little, hold my hand, and we'd go up that spiral staircase that you've been up many a times, Joe, to funny car guys waiting to get their cash monies.
Yeah, the tower had the most rickety, like, you see the tower. The tower was iconic in that it was permanent. You know, it was a big tower and you could see it. And but inside it, it looks much more substantial from the outside than it does from the inside. That spiral staircase was a little sketchy, a little rickety. And once you got up there, it opened up to a real office and a big area where I first picked up a microphone as a track announcer.
Yeah. Well, it's fair to say that we, you and me and my dad, we kind of all got our start out there. As long as you didn't go at Miami Hollywood, the real, and I hope I don't offend anybody. And if I do, oh well. But it's the quarter mile mark. If you pitted down past the quarter mile mark, which, because the pits could essentially go all the way down towards the shutdown area. If you.
No. You lose us again? We lose you again?
Well, you're coming in pixelated. You got to keep that point. We got to stabilize you.
We're not moving.
Yeah, okay. Now we see you're better now than you were before. Let's bounce you out for a second. Stay put, guys. Let's ask Chris Cunningham's got some fans out there. Chris, you were there. You spent a lot of time there. And now you're out there on the Mellow Yellow Series tour with Hector, and you're racing now. You hear a lot about Southern California drag racing, just like everybody else. But you grew up Miami. So where do you think it stacks up, our experience, compared to the other stories you hear?
So I think Miami Hollywood stacks up against almost any of the great tracks in Southern California, but what Southern California had to offer was several tracks where we had one. So I think it promoted a lot more at one track for us instead of having to bounce around the whole Southern California basin.
Simple as that. But the quality of the racers, and we talked to Tobler and Galvin the other day, and they had both been there on the match race circuit. Match racing was a big deal. Daryl and Jerry, are you guys back? We see you moving, Daryl and Jerry. When Daryl and Jerry move, everybody take a drink. There it is.
Back. Yeah, and I was just going to say, the people that pitted.
Frozen in time.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. Yeah. The internet. It's a miracle we get to do this, you know, at all. Like, that we get to be on here at all. So I'm not going to run.
The problem you got is everybody does.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, now you're back. Lord. Yes, I hear you now, Daryl. Yeah, well, the internet has been so taxed during this whole thing, Chris. It's been crazy.
No doubt.
But look at you. You're perfect. And they're on a cell.
It is.
Yeah.
I got to say, Hector and Chris, I know. Chris, I didn't know you that well. I knew your dad. Hector? Yeah.
Can you hear us?
It's a pleasure to see you when I see you on TV with.
So can you hear us now?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
It's a pleasure to watch Hector. Because I said I had a lot to do with your what you're doing now in your early years. Because I remember a lot of times you and we called you the Hammer. I'll never always remember that. It stuck with you.
Now, what about that?
It did. You know, do you someone still announced it in the loudspeaker, and he just took off.
Well, it was Lenny Baticki. Lenny Baticki, who is still out there, works on at PRN, has done a great job, and Lenny has nicknamed you the Hammer. And you're Hector the Hammer to this day. All right, Daryl, we're going to try again. Sometimes when I bounce you out and bring you back, it seems to work. So how about now? No, we're going to have to take drastic. We're going to take drastic things. Go ahead, Hector.
I used to give Paul a hard time because, you know, you get only a couple qualifying. And I always trying to be one of the first one. And hurry back and get back in line. And he will, no, you already had two runs. You had to have another one, but I'm over here already.
Chris, you've got
that was fun.
Chris has got fans out there. Well, that's the thing, is like every drag strip has got its local community, and that's where a certain type of person, the drag racer, goes. Like, you go to the drag strip, and that's where all your friends are, and that's where all the people are, and you go and you network, and Hector was there, and Paul was there, but you know the drag racers outside. And I guess, Paul, that's where you knew Chris's dad, and Chris's dad, of course, was a very big part of Daryl's team. And I know that when you'd go out for a Wednesday and Saturday, or Wednesday test and tune, or a Thursday test and tune, and that Gwyn Racing Top Fuel dragster was there for a test and tune, I'd be like, oh my gosh, it was like a super bonus. Or Hector, when you'd be testing, any NHRA big show machine that's testing on a regular night, that was a big, big deal. So, Paul, talk a little bit about that. When you'd get a call and all of a sudden Daryl and Jerry or Hector was going to come out and they were going to test and tune for the big show stuff.
Hey, I never knew who was coming out until Bruce called me up there and said, you got these guys coming. We just worked them in, and Jerry can tell you more because I have a blank spot. I did more with the staging with the regular cars more than I did with Jerry and them, most of the time. But I got involved with the Coca-Cola Cavalcade of Stars when they came out. That was the biggest show we used to have. Jerry can talk more about it. You know, that was the big one. It was eight or 16 of the fastest cars.
Yes, Daryl and Jerry, you guys are back now. Apparently, you guys only get to say a few things, and you are back. Daryl's getting phone calls. Whenever you see it go black, guys, it's because they got a phone call, and that throws it off. But Daryl and Jerry, we hear you. What do you got?
We're good. Well, I first want to say this. There's a guy on the phone there, Chris Cunningham, who was a very, very integral part of the beginning and all the way to the end of my racing career, driving career. He was there the night I got my license in my dad's AA altered. He's been with me since day one all the way up until like 1990. So we've spent our entire childhood and me chasing his sister back when I was a teenager to our dads racing together all the time. But we've seen a lot of crazy shit that happens out of Miami Hollywood that I will never, ever forget and never trade any of those memories for anything. Because absolutely not. Listen, you know, every once in a while you'll see something happen at a drag strip now and people go, I've never seen that happen before. I got news for you. We've seen it happen in Miami Hollywood. You know, like when the cars used to push start the dragsters, you know, and the tow bar would go bad, or the woman would turn the too sharp, and the bumper would catch the rear wheel and drive over top of the top heel dragster. I've seen people let the bodies down and run over themselves back in the 70s. I mean, you learned what not to do by going and watching some of these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Joe, before we get finished here, if anyone knows the whereabouts of Bruce Johnson,
yes,
we've been trying to get a hold of him for many years for the Hall of Fame, for the Miami Hollywood Hall of Fame. So if they could let us know, we'd appreciate it.
Well,
can you
absolutely
hear him okay?
Yes, absolutely. And we will put the word out. And we're getting close to the end here, guys, in that. So we'll ask you for some final thoughts. But yes, and not only that, here's some things that we need, since we hopefully will have some people that watch and dealt through this. I would love any photos. Remember, Miami Hollywood Speedway Park or Miami Hollywood Motorsports Park is a Facebook group. Join the group. If you have photographs, post the photos. If there was someone who had a radio commercial, like the Saturday night under the lights, Miami Hollywood Speedway, we would love to get those radio commercials. And they do have a Hall of Fame that they're working on. Hector was inducted into the Hall of Fame last year. Hector, what did that mean to you to be inducted into the Hall of Fame?
The Miami Hollywood Speedway Hall of Fame.
It was a dream come. It was a dream come true. You know, I've never thought that I would achieve that, and so I forever, you know, will remember that place, and the fans will remember me. You know, because it was the beginning of everything, and I used to hear Daryl Bin. When they announced him, every time he was successful, qualifying well at the national event, when he first ran his 3 second quarter mile, they announced it. So Hollywood always kept us informed of how Daryl Gwynn was doing at the races.
Very.
So that was really good, you know.
Very good. Hector, I want to thank you for joining us. I'm going to let you go. I know everybody is obviously busy. I appreciate you weighing in and telling us your Miami Hollywood stories.
Joe, can you hear us?
Yeah, I got you guys. And there's Hector and Daryl. But you guys are cover. We hear you, but we cannot see you because you are blackened for some reason. Like maybe you got a phone call or something like that. So we're just going to let you restart again. Restart again. How about that? And so, Chris, it's been interesting, like fighting the internet, but you got to fight. And you guys know what that's like. Fighting through tough times. I'm sure you're excited to go back racing again.
Man, I'm looking forward to it. I've done about every honeydew list. I've checked everything off twice. I've mulched. I've done everything you can think of, and it's finally starting to get nice enough here up in Indy where you can actually go outside and enjoy it and don't feel so bad, but we're really looking forward to get back to racing. Man.
Is there any talk on NHRA? Because NASCAR is coming back this weekend. Is there any talk about NHRA doing something? Or?
So right now we're at the mercy of, right now we're looking at an August start, and we're at the mercy of the states, you know, as it's a state by state deal, and if they open it up, like our governor here in Indiana is, he's got a date set as July 4th for people in the stands, and we're going to run IndyCar race July 4th, and July 5th we got a NASCAR race.
All right.
So that's his game plan, and provided we don't have any upticks in health issues, then. We're game on for July 4th here, and he's the only one that I know of that's put something concrete on paper.
That would be great. And with NASCAR starting this weekend, you know, it's frustrating, right? We want to go drag racing, so great stuff. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate weighing in here on Miami Hollywood, our happy hour show talking about Miami Hollywood. We got Daryl and Jerry back. Daryl and Jerry, can you guys hear? You guys have been so great, just fighting and fighting and fighting. Any final thoughts for Chris or vice versa?
Well, it's just, it's all great memories, and we have a very, very strong alumni with the Miami Hollywood alumni compared to a lot of other tracks. And because of that, we have a historical marker that is going to be going up. My dad and I and a gentleman by the name of Sheldon McCartney have been working through the Broward Commission to get a historical marker at Miami Hollywood on site. And we're hopeful to get that done this year and have car shows there on site where the racetrack was. We'll hold car shows there and move our Hall of Fame to that location and have a marker for the Sportatorium or the Snortatorium, however you choose to call it.
Smokatorium. What do you
want? Yes.
Smokatorium. I smelled my first marijuana cigarette there back in the early 70s.
I never
Jerry.
Spelled anything.
Jerry, did you know that?
Yeah, right.
Did you know that, Jerry? What? It's a sportatorium, yeah. Man. They should test the soil out there.
It was known for that.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a place for rock concerts, man. That's where you went.
That's it.
Well, imagine if it was 7 miles west
of anything.
Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah, and there was nothing. And it was a great place for people to get really, really stupid.
Yes.
That's fact.
Yes.
I worked it also. I had to work. That was part of the deal. You worked the drag strip, you worked the sportatorium.
You ever meet any rock stars, Paul?
I shook. Chuck Berry is the closest one I got to.
Maybe.
There it is. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up because this has been great, and I really appreciate what you've done, and we got Daryl and Jerry on a high note. You guys have done such a great job, so I'm going to jettison you guys one by one. Starting out, I guess, with Chris. Chris, thank you so much. World champion. You, Jimmy Proc, Robert Height, you threw it down last year. It was dominant, and I know you want to get back out there. And everybody lives in Brownsburg now, so we don't have what we had with Daryl and Jerry, where a Miami guy could root for a Miami team. But if you're a Miami drag racing fan, they can root for you. And so
there you go. I like that.
That's it. So good luck this year. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for having me.
All right.
See you, Tippa.
Tippa. There he is. Chris Cunningham weighing in. And Hector, now, again, I just wanted to say thank you again and spending time with us. You didn't have to. When you tried to qualify for the Gator Nationals, it was a big deal because you were from our hometown. And you did it, and you went on to be a world champion. And now your son, the first racer over 200 miles per hour. Thank you for what you've done. You're repping Miami very well.
Thank you. I can barely hear you, but I'll tell you what, Miami, Hollywood, it was like my second home. And I miss it. Sometimes when we go back to Miami, we drive over there and trying to remember. You know exactly what it was, and it's so hard now to pinpoint it. You know, I know I passed the mail, the post office, and I go about a mile further down, and there's nothing, no sign.
Well, okay. Daryl and Jerry have got a marker. So, Hector, thank you very much. Thanks for being on the show. Can't wait to see you out there, and you guys get your Pro Stock motorcycle season going.
Hector, it's behind the fire station. That's the main entrance.
Behind the fire station is the main entrance.
Fire station.
There it is. All right, Hector, thank you. There goes Hector. Hector Arana, world champ. And that brings us back. Daryl and Jerry, you guys have done. Now, Paul, I want you to stay on because I want to ask you a couple more questions. You guys have done such a great job fighting through this. I know there's a lot of people that wanted to watch. The internet is an imperfect thing. It's a miracle that we can do this at all. But, Daryl, you've already made it known that there's going to be a historic marker. But, you know, just final thoughts about what you've seen. Garlitz was there. Shirley was there. Coca-Cola Cavalcade of Funny Cars. The community. Photos like this. I don't know where this happened. It looks like BCC or something. But any final thoughts on South Florida drag racing?
I think that was at Gulfstream.
Yeah, that was all the local dragsters. They had like a little dragster club. And that was all the local dragsters. But one thing I wanted to bring up is Mark Miner and myself, we were at lunch one day a year or so ago, and we started counting up how many AA Nitro funny cars there were in this area in the 70s. And there was a dozen. There you go. Paul Smith in the Climax right there. That's in the mid 60s right there, man. But anyways, there was 12 AA funny cars in a 50-mile radius. And that's, you know, that's hard to beat, man. And there's not only, you know, there's only one now, Paul Smith. He's in Palm Beach, or maybe Dave Richards. But, you know, there used to be a slew of them back in the day.
So true. Hey, one more thing before we let you go, because, you know, it's widely known and accepted that junior dragsters began at Englishtown, New Jersey. But that's the way the NHRA tells the story. But that's not necessarily the truth. A lot of people don't know that the first ever junior dragster that we know on record is right there, a junior dragster with Daryl Gwynn behind the wheel, Little Briggs and Stratton, and a slingshot style. Do we need to change history and say that junior dragster racing started at Miami Hollywood?
Absolutely.
I like that because My dad purpose built that for me. Me and my neighbor, Mark Robinstraw, were going to build a go-kart with the motor. And my dad said, why don't we just build a dragster? And he had all this electrical conduit and aluminum laying around from the old Chevron stations. And he bent it up in like a weekend and built the front wheels out of, he built the spokes and, you know, spoke the front wheels and made the hubs. And it was had little Mini Cooper rear tires on it and had a 4-horsepower Briggs & Stratton. And I would match race a Carl Miller's daughter on a, and she would run a Honda 70, and I would run that that little dragster on a Saturday night at Miami Hollywood, and that was in the 60s.
See, exactly. Innovator and very beginning. Paul, any final thoughts before we let Daryl and Jerry get on out of here?
They're good friends. We see them a lot during the year. It's just been a fun how the association has been this long with good people like them. And I'm down in Homestead now, and that's starting to pick up, drag racing on street level. And a lot of people come up to me and said, I remember you running on a golf in Hollywood. And, you know, Jerry, I'm sure people run into you all the time. It's just remarkable the good people you meet in this sport.
So true. All right, Daryl and Jerry, thank you very much. You guys have been great. Apologize, obviously, thank for you. The internet issues. Who knows what's up? But
We apologize. We'll try and get it fixed for next time.
Well, thank you guys. We don't have to make this a one-time thing. And the Facebook group, Remember Miami Hollywood, is excellent. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank
there
you.
There goes Daryl and Jerry. And that leaves me and Paul Wunderlich. Paul, here we are, the end of the line. It's been a little bit of a battle. But we got to this point, and everybody fighting internet issues, but we got to the thing. You were there at the very beginning as a fan. You worked for the Johnsons. You worked for Dick Moroso. And you saw the eras go by at Miami Hollywood, then ended up at Moroso Motorsports Park and now at Homestead Miami Speedway, where they have Fast Lane Friday. For people who were not even remotely alive when Miami Hollywood was around in 1992 when it closed down. But what is it about drag racing, Paul, that has hooked you so much that you go out there and stand on a Friday night in front of two BMWs as they race down an eighth mile track?
I just love the rapport we're getting in what we've done at Homestead now. It's first of all, I always got to respect, it is a pleasure to bring you on when you come down, when you're not in the NHR circuit. The announcing has helped a lot. And it's real fun to watch how we built that. It started out, Homestead almost shut it down because it wasn't doing very good. And all of a sudden, somebody said, we got to try the internet. Somebody, one girl up in the Cosmos, we call it the Cosmos, the big tower,
yeah,
decided to put it on the internet. And the first time she did it, we had 125 cars. And all of a sudden, we started seeing some stuff. They finally let me put a little spray down on the concrete lane. We're starting to hook a little better, and I think that has a lot to do with it because they're not just spinning their wheels. They're getting some traction going down. And people like speed.
They do.
And let everybody know the new muscle car is back. Joe will know that. You have the Challenger. The Mustang is the number one down there, I think, in cars.
Yes.
And we have the Camaro.
But that's no different than 1986 at Miami Hollywood. The Mustang 5.0 Mustang was the car that everybody had, six right. lanes deep, et cetera.
Right. It's just everybody likes speed, and it's nice to have a place that we hope this all settles down and we can get back, because Homestead decided they wanted to run it more often after the NASCAR left, which was a plus that I feel real, and you and I should feel real good about that. We proved something. We've got it working good, and they like it now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paul, any final thoughts? Let me get a rapid fire session with you because this has been fun. Honestly, I'm a little bummed about the net letting us down a little bit, but it is what it is, folks. You do what you do your best. We're getting together. But I'm going to say a couple of names, and I just want your thoughts if you've got a story, something about it. Because in actuality, like Daryl and Jerry are celebrated on a pretty regular basis, and Chris, and Chris is a world champion right now, and so is Hector. But you are like an unsung hero of South Florida drag racing. Like, people may not know that you've been there the whole time, working hard, shepherding things through like a job. It's a job. So I'm going to say a name, and I just want your opinion. Can tell me a story regarding Miami Hollywood, okay? Four-wide drag racing.
It was fantastic when we came up with the jet cars to do that. Bruce Johnson said, Paul, you got an idea? I want to do something different. So I said, what about four jet? We had jet cars there. You know, Bruce went against the NHRA. They weren't sanctioned to run, but he didn't care. He brought them in anyway. And this is what the original ones look like.
Yeah.
See, I don't know if you can see the shirt.
Yes. Looks Looks like Shirley on there. Old school.
Yeah. So I went to Fred Cipolli Jr., Sr., and Green Mamba, and I told him what we want to do. We want to put two on the main track, two on the Georgia track, because we have double trees. And I said, I'm going to get in the guardrail in the center. I'm going to give a click with my thumbs and try to get the trees to come down pretty close. And all of you take off, but when the two on the Georgia track, you only can go about half track and got lit up because it gets narrow in the end. I can't have you do that. They said, Paul will take care of it. They put on the most fabulous show, and I'll never forget that as long as I live. That's got to be one of the first four-laners around.
What year do you think that was? What, like, ballpark it? What year? Four-wide jet cars at Miami Hollywood. What year do you think that happened?
I think it was in the late 70s, early 80s.
All right. Excellent. Next, Buster Couch.
He was a hard boss. He was my... as you know, we opened up Winston, and Winston was the main guys with NHRA at that time. Buster Couch, I'll show you a picture of him real quick if you can see it.
Yes. Yes.
He was the division champion. He was an old Southern boy. I'm not sure where he was in the center. And he was a hard nose. I mean, he really, when he came on, he got in the third floor tower. And he took over, and boy, you did what he said or else.
Ha, ha, ha. That's great. Jet shows in general were a big deal at Miami Hollywood. I'm going to end off this broadcast, which I've got some YouTube videos queued up after we let you go. I'm going to, you know, I got a label as Jet Car Joe out there on the NHRA tour because I go crazy because that's, I think, how you're supposed to go. And I think I learned that by watching jet shows at Miami Hollywood. That was always a big, big deal. They'd pack them in. There'd be people like walking down Hollywood Boulevard to get to the track. To see some of these crazy shows. Talk about the jet shows.
Oh, they were as you know, the original jet cars were not like they are today. I mean, they weren't sophisticated aerodynamic. All they were basically was a big jet engine with wheels and some metal wrapped around them, make them look good. Like I said, if you could see this one,
yes.
I don't have it.
Yeah, that's sure. Yeah, but right, I get it.
And they just put on the fire show was unbelievable. And real quick, while we're talking about jet shows, they brought this baby boy back in, and right. He set the world on fire.
Now, wasn't that the biggest show ever? Like, what was the biggest show you can remember at Miami Hollywood Speedway, Miami Hollywood Dragway, Miami Hollywood Motorsports Park? So many names over the years as it transitioned from the Johnsons to Dick Moroso. But like, if you were going to say you started working there in 1970, so you'd have a good guess. What was the biggest crowd, like the blockbuster, like the Woodstock of Miami Hollywood Speedway?
It was the day we brought Shirley Muldowney, Big Daddy Don Garlitz, and him.
Garlitz, Muldowney, Motes. And it was what? Packed to the rafters.
And there was standing room only on the Georgia track because we didn't use that track that night.
Wow. Which people standing out there. Kind of dangerous. Kind of dangerous.
It was, but they weren't close to the starting line. I mean, you know, they were. We had this year, but he had to. They ran out of the grandstands, the concrete grandstands. You see how big they were. They were full. You couldn't put a body in them.
Right. Now, what about Garlitz? You have any interactions with Garlitz? Garlitz, of course, coming south. I wanted to have Don on the show. It just didn't quite work out. But Big Daddy, he was a Florida guy, and he's repping Florida. There he is, Garlitz.
He was there a lot because, like you said, he's from Florida, and it was also the weather. And him and the Johnsons, I don't know if it was Bruce or Norm. I think it was Bruce. They were very friendly, and he always worked out a deal with him. Jerry might know more about that. One time we asked Jerry about that, but he was fantastic. And when they brought Shirley and him out there together, that was just unbelievable.
I often tell a story. I want your perspective on it. Again, being a fan in the grandstands, my dad would bring us out. We lived relatively close, Miami, Hollywood. I remember the first time, I remember driving in the car that is now our race car, the 1978 Pontiac Trans Am I show everybody on a regular basis. Me and my dad driving out to the track and Led Zeppelin playing on the radio, and it was a whole lot of love, and I just like, oh my gosh, this song is just so crazy, right? And going to Miami Hollywood. So all my greatest memories are there, and just thinking about that. But, you know, Garlitz and Muldowney and all these different people who would come in and do shows and being in the grandstands for Slammin' Sammy Miller and The Vanishing Point or Garlitz, Muldowney. So one night, you know, there was a period that the track started out and it seemed well funded at the very beginning. And then there was a period when it didn't seem very well funded and the lighting system maybe was broken or something. And so you guys had some spotlights shining down the track, like, you know, what people would see like normally in the air, like an air raid light spotlights. They just had it shining down the track. And so here the announcer is like, ah, Big Daddy Don Garlitz is going to come up. And I think he had the sidewinder there. And the light was broken. And the light wouldn't work. And it just kept going out. And we couldn't. People were getting angry. People like Miami Hollywood, like Daryl said, is where I learned that adults aren't all good educated people, man. Some people will throw beer bottles. Like, what? Like, I can't. I'm my dad's kid. There's no idea. There's no way that I would ever throw or anybody I know would throw a beer bottle. But other people will. Wow, there's other people that will do that. Well, the light wasn't working. And people were getting angry. And people were getting furious. And Garlitz finally jumps out of the car, goes over to the light, works on the light. The light comes on. And he gets back in the car and makes a run. Were you there for that?
Yeah, I was. I didn't know what was going on. I mean, I realized the light went out, but he did. That's the way Don Garlitz was. He wanted to please the fans.
It's amazing, amazing stuff. All right, next in terms of Dick Moroso, icon of our sport. Moroso Motorsports Park, Moroso Performance Products. He saved Miami Hollywood the first time by taking over the lease. And the crazy, chaotic late 70s, early 80s days faded away. He did have booked in shows, big shows, Hot Rod Sundays. That's kind of when I started to race. What do you remember of Dick?
What a fantastic guy. I got to know Dick Moroso almost personal, because when he did, he called me up one day. We got to be friends. When I ran this, I did become a track manager for the Sportatorium Corporation that took over the drag strip of Miami Hollywood when it reopened. It went dead there for a couple of years, and then everybody was gone. Then all of a sudden, the Sportatorium Group decided they had this over here. They wanted to get it going, and they brought it back. And that's the one. So I said, so he was, I would call him all the time and say, here's my program for the month. We became on that kind of a friendly basis. In other words, he said, Paul, let's not run. We share the same racers of the same piece of pie. So I said, Dick, I will call you. My test and tune, yours is Wednesday, mine is Thursday. I have to run. The only time I'll have, and I'll let you know, is when I have Dark Horse Promotion comes in with a special thing. They have to do a Saturday night. Otherwise, we ran Friday nights. We didn't run Saturday nights. On an average, went till he took over. And I said, I will let you know exactly when he's coming. And that we called each other, and that's the way we became real good friends. And the funniest day is I get a call from him when I knew he was taking it over. And I get a call from him, and he says, can you meet me at the track during the 5-day? I said, okay. And so we went up there. He opens the door. and it kicks one of the wheelchairs, the chair, not a wheelchair, but
yeah,
chair with wheel, office chair. He kicks it over. He said, park your butt. I said, okay. And I roll, okay, get back over here. And I roll back over here. I said, Dick, I said, you made me drive 75 miles one way. I said, to fire me because you're taking over Miami Hollywood. He said, what do you mean fire you? You're going to stay on as my track manager on Thursday. Mike Mitchell will come down and run this big program with you. You're with me. And that was, that went on for 25 years.
Wow. Mike Mitchell, who was weighing in and watching a little bit earlier. All right. What about the Joe Costello? What do you remember of that kid?
Joe Costello was a great human. Hoxie.
Yeah.
I'll never forget those two. David Hoxie. The biggest thing I remember, you guys, I never had a lot of problem with you. The biggest thing I had was your dad's coming up to me. Make sure they do their damn homework before they do drag racing.
And we did.
You did.
I did.
You did it. You did it in the car, I think, sometimes.
Yeah,
you
whatever. High school track champion, Miami Hollywood, baby. I got a Hollywood track championship. And I got the tree back there, which is really the real trophy. Paul, thank you very much for giving your time and spending time. Yeah, you're a treasure. Of course, what you do down there at Homestead Miami Speedway Fast Lane Friday is a big, big deal. We'd love a dedicated drag strip here. And I say it all the time that there is no market that would adopt drag racing more than the South Florida market. It's just that we don't have a track. People don't know the reason the track went away. Hurricane Andrew mowed over South Florida, and we needed housing very fast, and then the track was history. And it's now there's a movie theater and a fire station, and it's like a neighborhood. You would never know that there was a facility.
Well, so everybody knows the Sedanos is where the Sportatorium was.
The Sedanos is where the Sportatorium was. But Daryl says that Daryl's been working with local government to put a marker there and that there's going to be car shows, et cetera, which is great.
Right.
But it's not the same. It's not the same because we could have had a national event down there, and there is no market that would embrace drag racing the way South Florida would. Because of our style, you know, sunny place for shady people. Like, we love extreme, crazy things. And we have all the way back in the day. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to show us?
Everybody, keep your fingers crossed that Homestead reopens again. We got a nice rapport going down there with drag racing. There could be something down the road. You never know. We don't know what management's looking at. They know they're considering us a very high profile now. We got out of the dungeon. We're in the third place of their thing. NASCAR changed the schedule with their thing. You don't know what can happen. There is property that they own across the street. Keep your fingers crossed.
There it is. Paul, thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your effort and your stories. And we'll do this again as the internet continues to improve. Daryl and Jerry and Hector and Chris and everybody, I really appreciate you weighing in.
Thanks, guy.
All right. There he goes. Paul Wunderlich, Lane Master, Miami Hollywood Speedway. And so here we go. Honestly, to you folks out there, it didn't go exactly as I would have had it go in that the internet just on this given day was just not that great. And we were unable to do what everything I wanted to do. But I had some things planned for my guests. And so I'm going to share it with you guys now. You know, the YouTube is a great resource. Like, there's all kinds of amazing things out there on the YouTube. And if you search Miami Hollywood Speedway, you can see the track and people walking around with their shaky Sony handycams and et cetera. But I've got a couple of videos that I just want to share with you guys. And we'll watch them together as we enjoy a cocktail here. Friday cocktails next week. We got Megan Meyer going to be on the show. It is going to be great. I'm going to be headed to Performance TV on Motor Trend Network. And we're going to be doing our last shoot of the year. Before we get the videos going, and I hope that you enjoy them, I will tell you that Total Seal Piston Rings and all of these companies that support WFO Radio, folks like Total Seal Piston Rings, 20% off. They're doing 20% off for racers. Why? They don't have to do that. Right now, most people would be like, no, we don't want to do that. And they're doing it. Why? Because they want to help racers. Tools, rings, etc. Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Of course, Marvin Rodak, Rodak's Coffee. Get some coffee, man. Do it. Samtech.edu. If you want to get involved in this business, we got podcasts like Hidden Horsepower and Factory Stock Podcast, the Nitro Fish Racing WFO T-shirt of the week. Everybody's using the promo code, which is great. WFO20. WFO20. Save 20% off a T-shirt from NitroFishRacing.com, like the WFO T-shirt or the Erica Enders Champion T-shirt. Somebody yesterday bought the Jason Line Final Season T-shirt. All of those things. Also, before we get into the video, if you would like some WFO radio stickers, just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope to the address on the screen. P.O. Box 848-353, Pembroke Pines, Florida, 33084. And I will fill it with stickers and send it back to you. And then you can do whatever you want with them. But WFO radio stickers for free. Just send it to P.O. Box 848-353. All right, Miami Hollywood. These photos are from 1975, obviously a pro stock show. Someone put it together. It's up on the YouTube. And that guy, you might know, you might recognize, Bob Glidden. Bob Glidden, first of all, who started off on the Gap and Roush machine. And Bob Glidden, working at Miami Hollywood, there is the Glidden and Allen Pinto. A driver you might have recognized, Big Daddy Don Garlitz. And I see Paul Wunderlich is out there. He is still watching. Look at Paul, right? Someone was mentioning a little bit earlier about Dempsey Hardy. This is a view from the top of the tower, and you see that tree, which I believe to be the tree that I have in the background here. And you're seeing the Georgia Lane and the track, that a super long shutout. Ronnie Sox, Sox and Martin. Miami Hollywood, and there's a little turnoff where everybody used to hang out. If you have more videos on a handy cam somewhere, please send them. Joe@WFOradio.com or share them on the Facebook group. Remember, Miami Hollywood Motorsports Park or Miami Hollywood Speedway. So many great pro stockers from back in the day. And the track evolved from class racing, pro stock style racing. There's the tower. Years later, the second floor became where I would work, on the second floor tower. The third floor, early on, you can see people up on the roof. Clearly, this is the era before audio with film. Gap and Roush, of course, pro stock, early on days. And I can't, Barry Setzer, I don't know. He was always a funny guy. The dry hops, baby. And the South Florida sun in the background. Just look fast. You can see the back of the high banking. Great crowd. That's the spectator side. Now, this is 1975. I was 2 years old, so I wasn't there. I don't think my parents, the year my parents brought me out there, I was very young and I was afraid. So there it is. And thanks to the folks at Dragon Dart Racing for posting that up on the old YouTube, which is great. But now, no, I'm going to do that one for last. I'm going to show you a walk around Miami Hollywood from YouTube. And this brings me back so many memories, because this is it. There were different areas you would hang. And this is a perfect example. We've advanced to like 1990. And there's audio with video. It's crazy how things evolve. Two different staging lanes. The high-level cars, the pro-level cars, would stage in front of the concrete grandstand, which was really interesting. People would stage in front, so you'd get to see the racers and kind of get hyped up for what was coming. But the sportsman lanes went around the back. And so this would be where pro-ET, heavy, sportsman. The first classes I ran were out of those sportsman lanes. And you now are seeing one of the pit areas in the big concrete grandstand. This is probably a Hot Rod Sunday, one of the daytime races. And this angle is from the concrete crossover bridge. Norm Johnson had access to a lot of construction stuff. There's the concrete grandstand. And it was huge, the starting line. So you would camp out up here and watch. There's the tower on the mic. I was not on the mic, but on the mic, that's actually a young lady named Shanae, who her dad dog raced in Pro ET. And she got a job as a track announcer at the same time as I. And this, or as me. And this was a view. And there are cars that I see in this shot that are still out there racing in South Florida. But that area right there is where my dad bought this helmet. Horsepower Sales was set up right there. The first time we ever raced, he figured out once we ran in the 13s, he needed a helmet, and we went and bought it right there. And you can see where employee parking was, and that's where the round track was back there. And it was just a great scene. A lot of cars, Pro Stock Motorcycle or Motorcycle with Pit over there. And the tow truck driver, Trick Holmes. Now, I don't know if that's Paul Wunderlich or who that is being zoomed in on, but this person obviously wants to know. Is that Paul says that that's him? Paul says that's definitely him. Rich, Paul gives me the big thumbs up. He said, Paul, that's you, right?
I'm pretty sure.
There it is. And you can see that it was carved into the Everglades, like all these Malaleuca trees and Florida-type trees, and pits were packed. But most people pitted further down the track. Like way down there is where people would pit. And it was just a mob scene, very diverse crowd. Like everybody would be there. It would be little gambling sections. You're getting a good look at the people in the stands. You never felt unstable in the grandstands, which was a big, big deal. And obviously, they are on pause. All right, so finally, we're going to end it off with what is probably the best video out there. I've gotten a Jet Car Joe is my faux personality. When the jet cars run at an NHRA national event, I like to do the jet cars. And I become a character that is just over the top because that's what it's supposed to be. That's what jet cars are supposed to be. And what you're all looking at right now is the view that I remember as a child, sitting in the grandstands, and what you're about to see, and we're going to go full screen, is what I remember from drag racing. Like, everybody's got their first memories. I remember Garlitz and Muldowney and Baby Huey and Daryl and Jerry and just all these amazing cars, but ultimately Rocket Car Slam and Sammy, the jet cars. But this is a jet car show, and it is Lenny Baticki, I believe, on the microphone. Two jet cars that I don't know. Maybe Paul will know. Paul, if you want to hang out and watch, I'll come back and say goodbye to everybody. But let's watch this jet car show, about 3 minutes long, Miami Hollywood Speedway, the track, and they did it right. Golly Wally, what a show. 5 second run right there, Paul. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at right there.
That's under the Moroso grouping, right? When that jet show, because the cars look like the newer version.
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's 1990.
That might be a Lane Larson.
That says one. February 28th, 1990 is the date that is on the YouTube video. And it's just remember seeing the Green Mamba. I remember seeing all those cars. So there you go. Paul, any final thought? I brought you back to see the jet car stuff. I saw you watching down there. I figured I'd bring you back.
It's just been a pleasure. And Joe, thank you for what you're doing. You're keeping drag racing alive down here by what you do. And also, we'll never forget Miami Hollywood as long as we're the ones that worked there. I'm a fortunate. I went in the Hall of Fame the 14th. I was the first worker to go in the Hall of Fame. That's a privilege.
Yes.
You'll never forget that. And kids today, there you go. mine just says the 14th year. Anyway, come racing and, you know, come down to Homestead. Go visit an NHRA track when they're around at Gainesville when they come back, or wherever you're out of town near one, Atlanta. It's remarkable to see how they've come from this, some of these errors that we've watched.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But,
all right, Paul.
Joe, thank you for whatever you do. Maybe one day we can get together and show you some of these nostalgia.
Oh, no, listen, you've already made a huge mistake by alerting me to the fact that you have all this fantastic memorabilia. Like, we have to digitize it, Paul. No joke.
Okay.
We have to scan it.
I need help.
I know. And I'm there to help you. Like, we'll digitize it. We'll scan it. Find all your stuff. Put it all in the same place. As it so happens, I have some free time at the moment. Let's get this stuff out there on the web and save it. And somebody's got to have a radio commercial out there. And if not, we'll have Ron Hersey make it again. There it is. Let's do this. Look at that. You guys.
NHRA Firestone, when we became the champion.
Miami Hollywood was the track champion at the ET Finals. Exactly. And that's the year Dwayne McDaniel won his truck, as far as I understand.
There they are.
And back in the day, the center line. Right. Big sponsors for ET Bracket Racing. Big, big deal. All right, Paul, thank you so much.
And one more thing. There's the banquet where we got the track of the year before took over.
Well, in 1992, I was a track champion in 1991 on the high school team. So. That was the final year. I forget where. I've got the plaque somewhere, but
right.
Anyway. All right, Paul, thank you so much.
There he goes.
Excellent. Paul Wunderlich. And some final comments, some folks out there. Let's see. Drill Master Mom, history is priceless. God bless him. We need to see and feel more. It's so true. So true. Bobby Graham, my problem, the internet was worse than yours. That's life. Still good, though. Thank you for saying that. You soldier through. You can get angry. Daryl and Jerry have got so many great stories. But it's okay, because my plan is to have Daryl and Jerry into this studio at some point, and we won't have to worry about the internet. Al Pope, you guys don't realize Al Pope is a guy that is, he was a tech guy at Miami Hollywood and then Moroso Motorsports Park. Great person. And Al, the fact that you're out there watching this stream means a lot. You know, the people who helped you get to where you are, Al Pope, great kid, or great guy who helped me along. And I ended up racing Al Pope so many times. We raced back in the day. And let's see, 1975 IHRA race, very possible. I don't know, like certain sanctions, etc. Not everything is perfect. Good show overall. Thank you, Eric, for making me feel good. Lou says, great show. Hey, Joe, you need to check out Jet Car named Jet Car Bob, Hall of Fame. Very possibly. And let's see, final thought, John Marconi. Thank you so much. Thank you, John, for listening. And there it is. Again, we've already told you about our sponsors, and we've already told you about everything, and now it is time for us to head on out. But I do want to say happy Friday to all you guys out there. Yesterday, we had a great interview with Mike Heiner, who is a pro stock crew chief for American Ethanol Racing, but a very knowledgeable character. Also, John DeBartolomeo from Drag Racing Edge magazine. The YouTube channel, you can go back and find all our Friday Cocktails videos, whether it be Jason Logan and Courtney Enders or Ron Tobler and Ron Capps or whatever we have done. It has been a lot of fun. And that's the goal. Have fun. Get back racing as soon as we can and do it in a big way. Now, again, if you have photographs buried in a storage from Miami Hollywood, a video, if you have a radio commercial, you have an air check tape from 1980, Sonny Fox, Ron Hersey on Y100, where they're playing the commercials. Now is the time to dig that stuff out, find it, sort it, digitize it, and get it on the web. Because the history of South Florida drag racing, as we get older and older, it gets further and further away. People don't realize we've had some really great times. Garlitz, Fire Burnouts. Garlitz was epic back in the day, being at Miami Hollywood. The shots, the dim lights, the tree that you see in the background that somehow I was able to acquire. Thank you very much, Mr. Moroso. Garlitz versus a jet car. Ernie and Myra McDaniel. Ernie built my race car. Great person. And experience the best and worst at Miami Hollywood. Wonderful guy. May he rest in peace. Car similar to the freight train running at Miami Hollywood, of course. Daryl, Baby Huey. We rewrote history. Junior Dragster Racing started at Miami Hollywood. So many great cars. So many good times. Thank you to everyone.